2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans. For Cougar fans. It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
Home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome on in to Cougar Sports Saturday. Happy Pioneer Day to all of you out there listening here up and down the Wasatch Front, or if you're listening out of state online on KSLNewsRadio.com, the KSL News Radio app, wherever and however you're listening, we appreciate you joining us on this Saturday afternoon live, KSL News Time, 12.06 p.m., and we're talking a lot of BYU football content and also conference realignment. We got a loaded show. We've got a new BYU quarterback going to be joining us in hour number one, a transfer from Boise State, Kate Finnegan. Also, Fessy Sataki is going to be joining us. But let's just jump right into it, Matt. Conference realignment talk. We're starting things off in the leadoff.
The leadoff. A look at the stories making headlines right now. It's time for the leadoff on Cougar Sports Saturday.
It's the big story in all of college sports. The entire college landscape was completely shook earlier this week when reports emerged from the Houston Chronicle that Texas and Oklahoma were eyeing potentially joining the SEC. And since Wednesday, those reports have now evolved into Texas and Oklahoma plan to leave the Big 12 Conference as early as next week. So what this all means, as we're talking here on a BYU show, conference realignment, Big 12, BYU, what does this all mean for the Cougars, Matt?
It means that BYU has a chance. You know that dumber quote from Jim Carrey? So you're telling me there's a chance. And honestly, Mitch, this feels like the best chance and also the final chance for BYU to find their way into the halves. Now, I do think the way that we look college football is going to seismically shift. Just Power Five is gone, and if we're being honest, it's time to categorize these conferences, because to even consider the Pac-12 and the SEC as being on the same plane, that's over. It's done. The SEC is the cream of the crop if this happens, and by all expectations, this will happen early next week. Now, when they join the conference, that's up in the air. That's several years down the road. But the future of college football is not Power Five and Group of Five. That's basically over now. And now BYU has a chance to, of course, not get into the SEC. They're not going to be in that upper tier, but maybe they can creep into the same level as the Kansas States, Iowa States. That's the opportunity. I think it's going to be very difficult, Mitch, but now BYU, they're back in the driver's seat, whereas before it was they were way off in the distance, and now there's a real opportunity here for BYU.
Yeah, conference realignment is a fascinating topic that always finds its way into the conversation every summer, every offseason. Yep. It seems there's some sort of realignment talk. But this, Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC potentially, there's a lot of reports out there. And again, the latest reporting, we got a full roundup of it on KSLSports.com, is that Texas and Oklahoma as early as Monday are going to be leaving the Big 12 Conference and then putting in their request to go to the SEC. This has been something that's been worked on behind the scenes, according to reports, for the last 6 months. So how they've operated in silence to this degree, Texas and Oklahoma, for this long, is quite fascinating in today's day and age with so many leaks. But yes, conference realignment, this is a great opportunity for BYU potentially, because if in fact Texas and Oklahoma do go to the SEC, and by all indications it seems like it's headed that direction, SEC forms what many would say would be the first true super conference, getting to 16 teams. What then becomes of the Big 12 conference, who would then be down to 8 teams? To me, if you're the Big 12 conference, you got to band together and find a way to just expand and bring in a BYU, bring in a UCF, because I feel like if you give that power conference distinction to those type of programs, those athletic departments would be lifted even to a higher degree. You put the power conference tag on BYU athletics, I'm telling you, Matt, and you know this as well as anyone, it's like this fan base would be so invested. I mean, this fan base, BYU fans, are as passionate as they come already for a program that's outside the haves of college sports. You put BYU athletics in the power structure of college athletics in the Big 12 Conference in a league minus Texas and Oklahoma, this fan base would just be, they would be so passionate. The money would be flowing in. Everything would be exciting for BYU athletics. It would be a huge boom for BYU, and they would step it up to a higher level. I just feel like the Big 12 has always been short-sighted. That's why they're in the situation they're in right now.
Well, and I'm glad you bring that up, because to me, there's only one path forward for the Big 12, and it's not expanding to 12. Like, you can't be reactionary anymore in today's day and age, especially in the world of college sports. You have to be progressive thinking. Now, thankfully, BYU is. When NIL was ready to go, they had a program in place, and off they go. And they've been a leader in this state in terms of NIL, and I love that. Now, the Big 12 needs to be aggressive. I think the play for the Big 12, Mitch, here, and we're going to be talking all day long about different scenarios and what this could mean for BYU, what this means for college football. We want to hear from you, BYU fans. Text us 57500, text BYU, and we want you to be involved in the show, because this is a landmark moment in college sports. But to me, Mitch, the Big 12 has to go to 16. You go out and maybe you try and get Nebraska back. We know that Nebraska has been a little disgruntled in the Big Ten. Maybe, I mean, this is pie in the sky here. Maybe you hit up USC, UCLA. They've been disgruntled before in the Pac-12. Can you get them? UCF, Memphis, Cincy. I mean, you can't just say we're gonna fill in and do 12 now and we're gonna catch up, because the train's already left the station. You can't show up to an old way of college football. I think the only way for the Big 12 to stay alive is to push forward and become a super league of their own, expand to 16, copy what the SEC is trying to do. Maybe that could generate a good TV deal the next time around, because they're not going to compete with the SEC when it comes to TV money. But if they just try to react to what's happening, it's over for the Big 12.
And you mentioned TV money. I think that's what maybe could be the concern in all of this, because the projected TV money that ESPN is going to be dishing out to a 16-team SEC that involves Texas and Oklahoma, I mean, you're talking north of $60, $70 million per team potentially. Other leagues like the Big Ten are going to be looking at that and saying, what can we do to match that and continue to go lockstep, blow for blow with the SEC? And that's where it kind of gets dicey. Do they reach out to say, Kansas? I know you're thinking, Kansas? That football program is horrendous, and they are. They are awful. But academically, they kind of fit with the Big Ten Conference being an AAU institution. And I feel like that could be a possibility. And then you think about the Pac-12, that's a league that once upon a time, 10 years ago, flirted with Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, also Texas and Oklahoma. But there was conversations 10 years ago with some of those university presidents and the Pac-12. If the Pac-12 comes calling for Texas Tech or Baylor, I got to think they would jump at that opportunity, they being Texas Tech and Baylor. So I feel like the Big 12 should stay together at 8 teams and then just expand, because that's the best scenario, I think, for BYU. But I don't trust that these teams are going to stand pat, because I feel like they will sense that even though they'll maintain their power status, the TV money will not be that great on the next go-around in 2024, 2025, when ESPN has to dish out all this money to SEC, the playoff. There's not going to be much left for the Big 12, and they're going to be left behind financially, and that's what ultimately drives all of this. It's all about money. We'd like to talk about access and just having that power label, but it comes down to money, and that's what might ultimately break this thing apart completely and potentially dissolve in a worst-case scenario for the Big 12.
Everything is on the table now, and a few weeks ago, Mitch, we were talking about the playoff. That's on the table. And there was a proposal, And maybe that still is in play, but there's going to be so much shifting. It's going to be interesting to see, does the college football playoff stay at 12? Because maybe there's not a need. If you're only going to be, if there's four power conferences, do they say, hey, forget it? You know, we want to do our own thing where it's just us playing each other for the national championship. I mean, it's crazy to think that this is all on the table again. This is probably the craziest expansion talk that we've ever had. Like, I think about what was happening back the first go around a decade ago. That was little moves here and there. We weren't talking about major programs joining other conferences like this. I mean, what was the biggest move last time around? A&M to the SEC? That doesn't even compare to Oklahoma and Texas taking off out of the Big 12. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Everything is on the table.
Yeah, Nebraska to the Big 10. Like, yeah, it was a big move, but I mean, it just, nothing like this. I mean, this is a seismic shift to where you're completely reevaluating the whole landscape of college athletics and what's going to be the next moves for everyone involved. And BYU has got to figure out some way. And we're curious here on the show, for you the listener, what would be the best outcome for BYU in the next wave of realignment? Would it be a Big 12 invite, form a new conference, maybe a Pac-12 invite, or go to a Group of Five league, or independent, stay the path of the independent ranks? 43% of you saying Pac-12 invite. You can share your thoughts on the UCCU KSL text line 57500. You can text us your thoughts. Where do you think BYU would be best suited to go? What would be the best outcome for the Cougars in this realignment wave? To me, I feel like right now it'd be Big 12 invite, but Pac-12 would be, I think, the perfect fit. Like, that just, to me, makes so much sense, I think, in so many ways for BYU.
We have a good text here, Mitch, as I pull it up. Texter 1138, and we're going to be reacting to text tweets all day long. So we'll ask this question from the texter. We'll take a break, and then we'll keep going with conference realignment. So chew on this before the break, Mitch. Why would the Pac-12 take Baylor and TCU and their religious universities, but not BYU? Very good question here by Texter 1138. We'll touch on that after the break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Conference realignment. Where does BYU fit in all of it? We're going to be discussing it all day here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Back after this, it's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. Matt Viamonte, Mitch Harper. The big story in college sports right now is Texas and Oklahoma reportedly getting ready to join the SEC conference as soon as Monday, according to reports. And you can check out the latest on KSLSports.com. We're asking, it's our Cougar Sports Saturday poll, if those teams do leave to the SEC, what's the best outcome for BYU in the next wave of realignment? And the majority of you, 43%, are saying a Pac-12 invite. And we just had a texter 1138, saying, if the Pac-12 goes ahead and expands and maybe picks up a couple of these remaining schools from the Big 12, how does BYU fit into that? Because a couple of those schools, Mitch, Baylor, TCU, Texas Christian University, they've got a religious angle. So that would certainly add an interesting wrinkle into conference alignment.
Yeah, it'd be fascinating to think that the Pac-12 conference would add faith-based institutions. You know, that's one of the things that I struggle to picture with the Big 12, eight teams remaining going to the Pac-12, even though it'd be smart for them. It'd be smart for the Pac-12.
You're talking about a Pac-20.
A Pac-20 agreement. It'd be smart for both parties involved just from a athletic standpoint, maybe for TV. But culturally, it doesn't add up to me. Like, I'm trying to picture Oklahoma State in the Pac-12, in a very liberal Pac-12 that was afraid to play football until, like, November last season. They were frightened to play. So, I mean, I just, that doesn't wrap in my mind. It doesn't make sense to me. And honestly, these Big 12 teams remaining, they don't have much value right now out in the market. Like, Kansas has a lot of intrigue because of their basketball program, their academics, but they've had some scandals as well with their recent hire of Les Miles in the football program. Baylor's scandals are well documented.
Yep.
Like, there is such a, there's just not a impressive resume of teams in the Big 12 conference. To me, it's like they got to just handle their business internally band together and expand. Add BYU, add UCF, add Boise State. Maybe I could give or take on Boise. I think they deserve to be in.
They should be in.
But if you don't want to add them, fine. Cincinnati, please. That would be great. I think that would be good. Like BYU is willing to invest the money on travel. They're willing to do what it takes. Give them the chance and get them in a power league. They'll figure everything out. The only thing that they will not budge on is the no Sunday play. But if you adjust the schedules accordingly, it'll all work itself out. BYU can be a great addition for the Big 12 Conference. Yeah. It's such a better fit culturally for BYU to be in the Big 12 in that part of the country than the Pac-12. But yes, the Pac-12 geographically is just an incredible pairing, because you put BYU in a league with like USC and UCLA, 20,000, 30,000 BYU fans will be at every football game there is. And every basketball game, BYU fans would overtake Pauley Pavilion. Like, it would be incredible to see that happen. But we know the politics will get involved, and that's always going to be an issue. That's the biggest fear for this, with all this, Matt, is that if it was up to people that are athletic-minded, like ADs, BYU's getting in. They're getting in the Big 12. But it's not up to them. It's up to these school presidents who look at BYU and go, oh, there's not much academic freedoms. You know, they're not progressive enough. Because we remember in 2016, those letters from activist groups came at BYU, and I feel sunk their chances at going to the Big 12 then. So that, to me, is the biggest problem in all of this. If it was up to athletic people, BYU's in. Like, it just makes so much sense, but it's not up to them. It's up to university presidents, and I don't believe they value BYU as a brand.
No. I think that the Pac-12 athletically has tremendous value for BYU.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's enough in this situation. And the pandemic is shining a light on a lot of realities in college sports. And I think one of those is the political nature of the Pac-12. And that's why, to me, it's a non-starter. It's not going to fit. BYU just does not see eye to eye when it comes to the way that you live. Just the mentality. I mean,
but if they came calling, though, wouldn't you take that? You take it in a heartbeat. Like,
you don't have a choice because of the nature of college sports.
Okay,
but
thank you.
And if we're being real, the smart play for the Pac-12 is to bring on BYU and Boise, because I look at those eight remaining teams. BYU is not lesser than any of those teams on if you just compare BYU to this school, strip away the labels, strip away everything. You just say BYU and Texas Tech, what's a bigger draw? BYU.
Yeah.
BYU and TCU, what's a bigger draw? BYU. I'm talking money. I'm talking TV eyeballs. That can't be disputed, because there's facts that BYU is a top 15 team in terms of playing national TV games over the past, 10 or 15 years. That can't be BYU versus Oklahoma State. Maybe Oklahoma State a slight edge, but if you go over the history of these programs, BYU's been more successful than Oklahoma State. And so if you're the Pac-12, you say, let's grab BYU, Boise State, maybe San Diego State. I would, to me, this one team is actually a sneaky, interesting player, UNLV, because now you have got the tie-in with the Allegiant Stadium. You've got the tie-in to the Vegas market. You've got a respectable basketball program. Maybe some added revenue can bring these guys up. Would they be at the bottom of the league? Yeah, they would. But that could be an interesting 16-team conference right there if you add those teams. And I don't think, when you're talking TV money, those four versus the Texas teams, I don't think the Texas teams are going to add tons of value to where you're talking, oh, that if we bring on Baylor, we're getting $50 million a year. If we bring on these guys, we're staying pat. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, because I feel like those remaining Big 12 teams, whatever leagues they go to, I don't know if they really add much value at all. Like, I don't think that's what's going to be interesting with the Pac-12, too, and potentially all of this. Their commissioner, George Klyavkov, I hope I'm saying that right, the new commissioner of the Pac-12, he recently spoke with John Wilner from the San Jose Mercury News, and he said that, they would be foolish not to listen to calls. They're not going to add anyone. That's not their plans right now, but they'd be foolish not to take some calls and listen to some teams. I just don't think there's going to be anyone that's out there in the Big 12 that would be able to incentivize DirecTV to say, hey, you need to pick up the Pac-12 network. The only team that's out there in the market that could add value to that entity, the Pac-12 network, is BYU.
Yep.
'Cause I've seen BYU fans beat the doors down of the Mountain Network. Like, Comcast was just being infiltrated nonstop. Like, please stop bombarding us with your calls. Yeah. BYU fans are relentless. They're nonstop. Like, I just think that realignment We are learning, though, that these teams, they don't have much power as they think. You know, it's funny how Texas and Oklahoma, they're bolting, and suddenly we're getting these statements from Baylor's president, from the Oklahoma State president, where they're talking about, oh, the whole state economy and the cities of Stillwater and Waco are going to be impacted. Well, aren't you a power conference team? Don't you have so much power that no matter what, your brand is so powerful that you'll be able to make money on your own? Oh, wait, there's only a few teams that can do that. BYU's one of them.
Yeah.
Give me a break. Like, it's exposing the flaws in this whole power conference nonsense in college athletics. It's like, why don't we just restructure the whole deal? Everyone's their own entity, and let's see who can carve out their own TV deals, their own TV contracts, their own schedules then. Then we'll see who the real power brokers in college sports are. These conferences have masked these terrible teams and athletic departments for far too long, and the Big 12 is getting completely exposed. They need to be forward-thinking, that conference, for once in their dang life, and actually add some teams that they believe will be potential risers in the sport of college athletics. BYU is a proven commodity. Add them. They're going to bring a ton of value to your conference.
Yeah. Well, that's why I believe the Big 12, if they want to survive, they got to go 16. They got to grab every good team that's left. Cincy, Memphis, UCF, South Florida, BYU, Boise State, San Diego State, maybe throw in an Air Force. They just can't say, we're going to add Houston, we're going to add SMU, we're going to add Tulsa and Memphis, we're going to stay tight. It's just not going to work. It's going to fall. So, man, it is exciting to think about the possibilities, because anything is possible right now.
Yeah.
Anything.
It's. I know we don't like to pull from it often, but in the words of Kevin Garnett, anything is possible! And that's a great thing. Like, we were talking a few months ago about how cool it'd be to have, like, Danny Ainge at BYU. Get him on the staff right now. Yeah. Draw up those deals, negotiate. Like, this is a six allotment of six draft picks, the wheel and deal. Go get it after it, Danny Ainge. Anyway, we got to take a break. On the other side, we're going to talk to a new transfer quarterback, Cade Finnegan. He joins us here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSL Sports.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Keep your texts coming here on the UCCU KSL text line about your conference realignment takes. We'll get to those a little bit later in the program. Again, that text line is 57500. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte with you today. KSL News Time, 12:41 p.m. We got to get out to the phone line and welcome in our first guest of the program. He's the newest member of the BYU football program. He's a quarterback, and whenever you talk quarterbacks at BYU football, that's a big deal. And he's joining us now to discuss why he picked the Cougars, and that's Cade Finnegan, Boise State transfer quarterback. So, Cade, welcome on in to Cougar Sports Saturday.
Hey, how are you? Hey. Glad to be on the show.
Yeah, happy to have you on board, Cade. And congrats, first off, on your decision to commit to BYU. For fans out there listening, they might be familiar. They probably are familiar with you because you stepped in that game against BYU last season for Boise State. Since then, how suddenly you become a BYU quarterback? Take us through this.
Yeah, so it's a fun story, actually, just because, I did get to play against the Cougars last year, and it was, I'm sure, a fun game for Cougar Nation, but, you know, on the other side of things, it's a little tough, right? It's always rough losing, but, kind of went through the season after that, and we had a coaching change and everything, and, at the end of the day, I just felt I need a fresh start, right? Somewhere else, kind of see what else is out there. And I decided to enter the transfer portal. And kind of like right as I entered, I got hit up by a few schools, and then BYU reaches out. And here I am thinking, wow, all right, it's kind of crazy. I played against them last year, and now they're recruiting me to come play for them. And for me, it was kind of a no-brainer, right? Like, my family grew up Cougar fans. My dad played there. I've been wearing Cougar jerseys since I was a kid. So it's kind of like a dream come true for me. So,
Cade, take us back.
Oh,
go ahead. Sorry, Cade.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I talked about it with my family, and we decided, you know, that's kind of where I want to go, so I committed.
Take us back to your high school days. What was the recruitment like there? Did BYU play into it, and what ultimately led you to Boise State for that season?
Right, so it was a little crazy out of high school just because, you know, I was getting recruited by a lot of schools. BYU was in the mix there for a little bit, but, you know, then I decided to go on a mission, and pretty much every school that I was talking to dropped me. And BYU at the time was going through some coaching changes, so I kind of fell off their radar, and then I left on a mission, right? So, yep. You know, at the end of the day, I was focused on that. I wasn't really too worried about football at the time, but about 6 months or so before I came home, Boise State reached out and was like, hey, man, you know, you've been on our board. We remember you from our camp a couple years ago. We hear you're coming back here in a little bit. Would you like to come play ball? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Of course I want to play ball. So, you know, they offered, and I committed. And a couple days later, USC reached out and offered, and that was awesome. And, you know, it was a big decision, but at the end of the day, I stuck it out with Boise State. And, yeah, the rest is history.
Talk with BYU commit Cade Finnegan here on Cougar Sports Saturday. And you mentioned that transfer portal experience, how BYU and a few other schools hit you up. What maybe was surprising about BYU contacting you?
You know, I think it was just because it was kind of late in the game, right? Obviously, I was past the July 1st cutoff. So if I entered the transfer portal, it meant I had to either go down a level to play or I was going to have to sit out this year. So it was surprising that, you know, BYU reached out, and even a few other Division I schools reached out just, you know, because they knew I was going to have to sit out a year. So it was kind of one of those things that I just felt, you know, this is where I'm meant to be. It's a blessing, and I was grateful for them reaching out. And so it just, you know, felt right. But it was surprising just because, you know, it's a little late in the game.
I got to say, Cade, the last time a quarterback that was either committed or played for Boise State was and then switched to BYU was Zach Wilson. So, I mean, I'm just saying, Cade, there's a precedent here. What's some of your goals that you want to accomplish when it comes to your football career and when you do ultimately get the chance to have a chance to play at BYU?
Right. Well, I mean, first and foremost, you know, I'm ready to just go compete, right? It's obviously a pretty solid quarterback room, right? There's a lot of talent in there, and I'm excited to get in and work with those guys. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm here to compete, right? And trying to earn an opportunity to play. And if I do get that opportunity, obviously I'd like to, you know, do well, win a bunch of games and, you know, succeed in my own personal goals as a quarterback, but, you know, for the team as well, whatever the team has in mind. So, but first and foremost, I'm just ready to go in and compete, right? I have a year to kind of learn the system, get under my belt, and then, you know, show what I can do.
As you told us, you got the tie-ins, the family tie-ins, but what specifically about BYU now appealed to you, maybe from a coaching perspective or from a style of play perspective as well?
I mean, obviously, you know, I got a really good seat last year in watching the game. And, you know, in other games too, in film that I've watched, just the kind of offense that they run and just – like the amount of diversity they have and their ability to pass the ball. Obviously, Zach Wilson is an amazing quarterback, and he really showed kind of last year the talent that they have on offense and just their ability to really spread the ball around. And so I was excited about that. Obviously, in talking to Coach Roderick on the phone when I ended the transfer portal, getting recruited and everything, you know, he just seems like a great guy and a really knowledgeable dude when it comes to the sport. So I'm excited to get to work with him and, you know, learn this offense and then, you know, be a Cougar ultimately. So
what's the timeline, Cade, for when you plan to arrive and roll, get kind of situated in Provo and be formally officially with the BYU program?
So I'm actually in the area right now. I'm living, or I guess staying with some friends in Bluffdale right now before I come. So I'm already here, but I just have to get a few things checked out in terms of, like, medical, whatever, you know, physicals and all that before I can start practicing with the team. But, yeah, I'm here. I already applied. I was admitted to school. So it's all in motion. I'm ready to roll.
For BYU fans that maybe don't know you beyond just that, you know, glimpse of the BYU Boise State game last year, how would you describe your style of play? Maybe who are some inspirations at the quarterback position for you?
Ooh, good question. You know, I think something I do well is my escapability. You know, I was always kind of undersized in high school and even in college. You know, I'm not the biggest quarterback out there, so I kind of got to, you know, adapt to survive, right? And so I've really gotten good at being able to move, be quicker than the guys coming at me, right? Be able to run away from them. So I think that's something I pride myself in terms of my game, being able to move, make things happen outside the pocket. But then also my accuracy. I've always worked on that, just, you know, from the sense I don't have the strongest arm out there, right? Like I said, I'm not the biggest guy, so there's not a ton of power. I can obviously, you know, launch a deep ball if I need to, but my accuracy is really where I feel like I do best. So, yeah, it's what I hope to bring to the table and ultimately, you know, hopefully help me win the job eventually.
Okay, last thing before we let you go, what is it about Aaron Roderick from your conversations with him that you feel maybe makes him a good quarterback coach? He's the offensive coordinator, the guy that leads it all for BYU. Mm-hmm. But he even says, you know, like he wasn't, you know, didn't play the quarterback position, yet he's had an ability to develop quality quarterbacks at his time at BYU. What do you think makes Aaron Roderick successful from just your interactions with him?
I think, I mean, ultimately he's straight up with the guys, right? Like in talking to him, you know, he's straight up with me about what he sees in my game, what he thinks I can do, how I can help, but also kind of what they're dealing with in the quarterback situation. I think especially at the quarterback situation or in the quarterback position, you need a coach that's going to be honest with you, right? That's going to be straight up and tell you how it is and work with you on that. You know, he's not going to throw you under the bus. He's not going to leave you out to dry or kind of feed you your ego or whatever. He's going to be straight with you. You know, in talking with him, he told me things about my game, you know, saw, but other things that I was like, oh, that's a good point. I agree with that. And so I really think he's just good at analyzing the game and then being straight up with you about it, you know, telling you what needs to be done and how to do that, right? So and I'm excited to work with him.
Was he straight up with you about who's going to be the starter on week 1 against Arizona?
Oh, he was not, no.
I'm just kidding. Kay,
unfortunately, I do not have that information.
Hey, we appreciate you spending some time with us. Again, congrats on getting admitted to BYU. It's a tough school to get into, so anyone that can get admitted into BYU, congrats on that. And good luck in your football career. We'll see you at fall camp August 5th.
Yes, sir. I'll be there.
All right. Well, we'll continue to watch your career and excited for you in your time at BYU again. That's Cade Finnegan here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Appreciate you, Cade. We got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll talk more about this BYU quarterback room in 2021 and beyond. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM
and 1160 AM.
Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday. We're talking college football realignment. We're getting some texts. We're getting some tweets. It's obviously a fascinating story. If you've been living under a rock, Texas and Oklahoma are probably taking off to the SEC as soon as Monday, according to reports, which... there's so many fascinating layers to the story. One, apparently Texas A&M is in the dark, and they want it away from Texas. Now they might be paired with Texas. From a football sense, like, how do you split the divisions? Like, you can't put those guys with Alabama. I mean, that would be ridiculous to have that split. And then what happens to the remaining eight teams that right now I mean, there's reports coming from everywhere, so it's hard to sift through it all. But Kansas has reportedly reached out to the Big Ten. Do teams reach out to the Pac-12? I mean, it is crazy, which is why we asked this question on our Cougar Sports Saturday poll, and you can find this on Twitter. What's the best outcome for BYU in the next wave of realignment? And right now, a lot of you are saying the Pac-12 is the best option at nearly 44%. Is that the best option for you, Mitch Harper?
No, it's not because of the cultural fit. It's just not. To me, the best fit is BYU with these eight remaining teams in the Big 12, plus UCF, plus Cincinnati, plus Boise State, even Colorado State maybe, or Air Force, Navy. I'm in for the military academies. The Big 12 should go jump it all the way up to 16 teams and try to cash in whatever they can that's left, maybe of that TV deal one, or try to feel like, hey, these teams in a power league could be elevated. Like BYU could become one of the best programs on an annual basis, I believe, in that remaining Big 12 of the eight teams left. I'm telling you, like I feel like BYU could go in and be one of the top dogs. Now, would they be behind closed doors, one of the respected voices? No, they'd probably be at the bottom of the totem pole. But as on the field, BYU would do very well in a football league and a men's basketball league with those teams. Basketball, maybe not. I mean, Baylor and Kansas, those are some powerhouses. But, man, it would be a huge boom for BYU sports. What say you? Do you think the Pac-12 would be the right fit?
Oh, absolutely not. No, it's not the right fit. And when you're in the position BYU's in, you can't say, well, you stiffed us before, so if you come calling, we're going to stiff you again. You can't do that. But it's not the right fit. It's for the same reasons you mentioned. I think that's the case. I mean, look no further than what happened last fall. BYU wanted to play. Pac-12 didn't want to play.
If they gave an offer, though, like you're taking it. Like, by no means. Well, Pac-12 commissioner out there, you give BYU an offer?
Now,
BYU should take that side
unseen. I'm glad you bring him up because this guy was running MGM for a long time,
yes,
in Vegas for a long time. I think there's going to be a shift in this conference just in terms of how they operate. So that intrigues me because if it's a Larry Scott Pac-12, I'm probably saying no. Now,
yeah.
Now here's a question.
Jamie Zinnovich is also there too. He's the deputy commissioner, former WCC commissioner, loves BYU, so maybe something could be there. I'm reaching. I'm pulling something.
What if you have two offers, Pac-12 or a new Big 12?
That's a good question. How sweet would that be, by the way?
You
like,
go from
BYU goes from nothing, begging, give us something, to two offers.
kind of like the housing market right now. Just you got to be throwing offers left and right.
I feel like you'd have to go Big 12.
Yeah.
I feel like just because, again, the cultural, maybe less teams, and then you get maybe bigger payouts, maybe. I don't feel good about that if there's two offers on the table, but I'd probably say Big 12.
For me, it's form a new conference, but it's not so different from what you said because the Big 12 really has to form a new conference. I would shed that title. I would, as I've said earlier in hour number one, I go to 16 teams and I just grab the best of the rest and throw out a couple wild offers. Nebraska, you want to come back? You sick of being down below in the Big Ten? Come be the new face of this new thing. USC, UCLA, you guys sick of, it's not a fair share. I mean, I'd throw anything out the window. Forget fair revenue. I would tear this thing, you know, and try and recruit USC and UCLA. Come join this new thing. You get the most. No problem. Nebraska and this middle tier group, you get, because BYU, they don't need to make the most. And
no.
I don't think they care about that. I think they'd be fine being on a lower tier. I mean, if you were to make, let's say, I'm just throwing out numbers here. We're just everything's on the table, so we're talking about everything on the table here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Hey, you and Boise and some of these lower teams, you only get 15 a year. You'd sign up for that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know, it's interesting you mentioned Nebraska. We just got a tweet coming in, and you can tweet at us at KSL Sports, or you can text us on the UCCU KSL text line at 57500 to share your realignment thoughts. Cougars 09, Rick Dalton, shout out Rick. He tweets in, BYU's only option is Big 12. Partner with the Utes, take Colorado back, possibly Nebraska. I love that.
I'm not,
BYU in the same league again?
I'm not against
that.
I'm not against that. I'm not against leaving Utah behind as well and just leaving them in
Utah,
the Pac-12.
Under no circumstance would ever leave the Pac-12, though.
No.
Because, like, they're in, I mean, they're indebted to
the
Pac-12. And
they should be.
Yeah, they should. It's a good fit culturally.
It's a great fit. They were the ones who elevated them to that upper status.
Yes.
There needs to be some loyalty there, and that's fine. But Colorado and Nebraska form that, because that's a rivalry. That's a big rivalry.
Yes.
Bring that on back. They headline the top tier of this group, and then you fill it in with UCF, Houston, Cincinnati, BYU, Boise State, the remaining teams there. That would be nice.
I'm not going to lie, though. The only issue I think the Big 12 has, minus Texas and Oklahoma, is that there's just no flagship brand. Because I feel like if they had, like, if Texas was going to the SEC, okay, fine, go. The nine remaining teams that includes Oklahoma, you could maybe sway a USC, maybe, into this hypothetical scenario we're talking about, to come to the Big 12 with an Oklahoma, because there's a flagship brand within the league. You know, where I look at those remaining eight teams, I don't think you could really get a Pac-12 team or a Big Ten team to leave their current power leagues for a volatile Big 12. Like, I just don't think they would. Because the Big 12, the last 10, 11 years, we've been talking about this league nonstop. Will they do expansion? Will they expand? Will they not? What are they going to do? Are they going to dissolve?
Well,
like,
we've
had the same conversation for 10 years with this league.
We wouldn't be talking about it if they were progressive, though.
Yeah.
If they had jumped up to 14 or 16 first, and they added a bunch of quality good teams.
Do you believe that, though? Do you feel like
yes.
2016? Because I really felt like in 2016, that was the ticket. That was the year it was going to happen for BYU with conference realignment. And then the LGBTQ activist group came out with those letters. I felt in that moment it sunk it. BYU's chances were sunk completely in that moment. But do you feel like if the Big 12 had pushed forward and ignored all the letters and the activist groups to shoot down BYU and other candidacies, do you feel like if they would have expanded there, that would have saved Texas and Oklahoma from leaving the SEC? Because I don't.
If the Big 12 had expanded in 2016 to 12 teams and included BYU and Boise State, you would have had some great football games with those teams. Boise State has been a 10-win team. And BYU, look at what they did last year. If they are in the Big 12 playing conference games only last year, they are at least in the top three teams in the conference, and that story's elevated. The problem has been, Mitch, is that all these other teams expanded, and the Big Ten just replaced people that left. They didn't move forward, where the Pac-10 went to 12, the Big Ten went to 14, the SEC went to 14.
Yep.
These teams moved forward. The Big 12 didn't. They just filled it in with other teams. They didn't take a step forward. If they had went forward and added a bunch of teams and been, wow, the Big 12 is shaking things, I think we would not talk about the Big 12 like we have the last 10 years, which is, well, you guys did nothing but replace people that left, and now we're just wondering when it's all going to fall apart.
You know, it's interesting. With this whole realignment talk again, it feels like it always finds its way. But this is like the biggest moment of realignment I think I've ever seen.
By a mile. This doesn't even touch what happened in 2010.
This is bigger than Nebraska to the Big Ten. I think it's almost as big as when like Penn State and Florida State went to the ACC. Florida State turned down the SEC back then, and then they went to the ACC, and then Penn State went to the Big Ten. That to me is like, this is the biggest since those moves. Because in 2010, really, you look at it and go, who was...
It was noteworthy because teams that were have-nots were elevated.
But what I mean is, like, you look at it and you look back on it and go, did these leagues just get significantly better by these additions? Not really. Like, Nebraska's done nothing.
Nope.
Utah's been good, but they haven't got the DirecTV deal with Pac-12 Network. That's been a colossal failure. Like, Colorado's been still terrible. Like, you just look back at those moves and go, it hasn't been that big of a needle mover like you thought back in 2010. This is massive, getting Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC, and it changes everything. And I think back to some of my conversation. I actually recently, a year or two ago, I can't remember, but spoke with the former Big 12 commissioner, Dan Beebe. And he told me, he's like, the conversations with Tom Holmo were fantastic in 2010-11. Everyone respects Tom Holmo. I think, again, it comes down to athletics. Everyone respects BYU's athletics. It comes down to politics. And in this world where it feels like politics infiltrate everything, it's the sad reality. And politics Religion, it comes into play. And I think there's so many ways that university presidents can always find a reason to shoot down BYU. To me,
this might be the one time where that's not true.
They need to get over that because BYU can add a ton of value. Like, well, they got to get BYU. And I'm telling you, you get BYU in this power brand, it's going to be elevated. BYU's recruiting, they'd be a top 40 recruiter annually. BYU would take off in a power conference.
They'd
it'd be massive.
They'd have the biggest football stadium in the conference.
Yeah,
they'd be the most watched team in the conference over the past 10 years. I mean, if that's not elevating the brand, then I don't know what is.
It would be huge for BYU, and hopefully Big 12 would consider adding and make that move happen in the near future. We got to take a break. On the other side, we'll continue to talk more about realignment, what BYU's done over the past decade to enhance that brand to position themselves for the Big 12. This is Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSL. Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. 6 weeks from today, BYU football season kicks off in Las Vegas against the Arizona Wildcats. Next Saturday will be the last off-season show of the season. 2 weeks from now, we'll be talking fall camp, Camp Kalani. We'll be immersed in that, probably realignment talk still. A lot of conversations taking place right now in the world of BYU sports. Always keeps us on our toes, keeps us busy. And you can always check out all of our content that we create on kslsports.com and, of course, on our podcast feed as well, Cougar Sports Saturday. And we're talking a lot about conference realignment right now. And Matt, you know, the last time or the first time really where realignment was a big talking point, it feels like BYU's always kind of flirted for years and had this belief that they could maybe get to the Pac-10, the Pac-8 back in the day, you know, Big 12, whatever it may be. There's always been BYU linked to some potential conference realignment moves, but back in 2010, it was out there, public knowledge, public notice. Everyone was talking about it. I'm curious, since that first real wave in 2010 of realignment, where do you feel like BYU has improved as an athletic department to maybe better position themselves to get into a Power 5 league now at this time around?
It's a great question. I'd say first and foremost, I think BYU has done a great job of breaking down some misconceptions about what they represent. Like, you take earlier in the week, BYU Athletics promoted Diljit Taylor from Associate Director of Cross Country to Head Women's Cross Country Coach. Not a member of the church, kind of a surprise, because there was this, there was this misnomer out there that you had to be an active member of the church to be the head of any athletic team. And that's not true. That's been something they have done in the past, but that's not mandated. And there's, I think, a lot of other things that maybe you would put under the political umbrella where BYU has said, hey, we're not as difficult. We're not as rigid. We're willing to change and be flexible and do things a certain way. And so from that perspective, I think BYU has increased their value. I do not think under any circumstance in today's wave of realignment you can say BYU is difficult, BYU isn't inclusive, BYU won't bend or tweak things. Now, obviously, there's certain things that are non-negotiable. They're not going to play on Sundays, right? But so from that perspective, I think they've enhanced it. Athletically speaking, they have also enhanced it. The problem is it just hasn't been football. And that's the thing that moves the needle, because everything else about BYU athletics is extraordinary. It's amazing the health of the department as a whole, and football now is included. It's just when you look back over the past 10 years since the last wave, they haven't been as good as they were in the 2000s, because BYU was from 04 to 10, 2004 to 2010, that was a premier brand of football, and they proved it on the field. That just has not been the case the last 20 years, or 10 years, excuse me. So that is a very, very interesting question, and it's up into interpretation, and that's what makes this difficult.
Yeah, and I think also, too, that I feel like the sense I get, and some of these things, people operate behind the scenes, and they don't ever come to light and really talk to people in the media publicly or anything, but I feel like back in 2010, remember there was a brief moment when BYU was talking with the Big East? Remember that? Like,
yes.
How crazy
and Boise State,
and San Diego State was talking. I'm like, there was a moment when Boise State and San Diego State were in the Big East. That's it. Anyway, I digress. But at that time when those conversations were happening between BYU and the Big East, there was a report out there. I think it was like from CBS back then, that said BYU's, you know, brass and BYU administrators were, quote, a piece of work to deal with. And I think that's a good point that you make, that I think they've shown over the last 10 years they're a lot more flexible than they get credit for. Especially you've seen it within, like, scheduling agreements. Like, last year, BYU was very flexible. Houston wanted to have the game played at home because their medical experts were saying, hey, we can't travel this time or whatever it may be. BYU was like, okay, great, we'll go to Houston. You guys come to Provo later year.
Coastal.
Most teams would not do that under any circumstances. Yeah, Coastal Carolina.
They didn't even sign an agreement. They just jumped on a bus and a plane and zipped out there.
Coastal might never come through Provo ever. They might ever just decide to do it because that was just a verbal agreement. There was nothing in writing that they have to do that. But BYU did it. Like, they just want to put their program, their athletic department, on the best, highest, most impactful, recognized stages in all of college athletics. And they're not going to cheat. That's a good brand. Like, you think about all these programs mired in controversies and scandals that are far more egregious and awful than, like, an NCAA paying scandal. Like, oh, so-and-so went to Universal Studios and got butterbeer. We're going to take away 47 wins. Like, no, they were talking about horrendous Title IX sexual assault scandals that have happened, like the Big 12 with Baylor. Kansas had an awful deal with Les Miles recently. It's like, BYU is a good brand. Like, they do things the right way. They do things on the up and up. And it's like, why would you not want to partner with that and have them in your league? It just doesn't make sense to me. And that's when you go to, then is it simply just that they're a faith-based institution? And that's where I think a lot of fans, I know a lot of Cougar fans, that just feel like that's the reason why they're out. Like, that's it. And others would argue, like, no, it's not that. But you're talking about one of the 10 winningest programs in the last 50 years of college football. They're the 10th winningest program in all of college football in the last 50 years. So this is not a flash-in-the-pan program. This is a consistent winner that does it at a high level with far less resources than the other 9 teams that are in that top 10. Like, give BYU Power 5 resources and let's see what it can become. That's, to me, so one of the most fascinating things about all this is, like, BYU fans for years, for decades, they've always just dreamed of, what would that look like of BYU in a power league, in a BCS league, in a autonomous league? What would they become? And I think there's a lot of endless possibilities. And I think that's why if they can get a chance to get that offer, it would be amazing to see it happen.
I don't know if they're going to have to get the offer, because I think that there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking, because you look at a team like the AAC, which has been on some serious acceleration in terms of respect, what they've done in big bowl games. I'm talking about UCF beating Auburn a few years back. I think there could be some meeting of the minds, because what I've come to understand about this wave of realignment from the SEC, because you would have never thought in a million years that Texas and Oklahoma would go and be second fiddle to Alabama and the SEC. But it sounds like they're going to. So now everything's on the table. Start something new, contact anybody and everybody, and try and build something creatively that appeals to other people. Because if you just try to get a 10-team league, a 12-team league, you're dead.
Yeah. That isn't BYU's DNA, to create leagues.
Yes,
maybe that's something they got to pursue. Anything's on the table. Keep tweeting your thoughts. Texas 57500. We got to take a break. On the other side, the top 5. Excited to see what the maestro Dallin Graff's got on tap for us. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Sports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for 3! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Gotta say, the conference realignment gods are good to us. July 24th, the dog days of summer. Happy Pioneer Day to all of you out there. But man, usually this time of the year, there is nothing much to talk about. And conference realignment, it is giving us some great conversation today. The text line's blowing up. We'll get to some of your texts momentarily. I know we've been promising it, but we will get to your texts and your comments on conference realignment. But right now, we got to get to the top 5.
The
Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5. Mitch and Matt clash in a weekly battle of BYU sports knowledge. The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5.
Yeah, the Top 5 always brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business valuation and strategic consulting firm. If you need a business evaluation, contact econpartners.com today. They're ran by diehard Cougar fans, BYU MBAs. They're the best. Contact econpartners.com if you need a business evaluation. It's Economic Partners. Let's bring in the maestro of the Top 5. He's our producer, Dallin Graff. Dallin, how are you on this Pioneer Day?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. It's a great day to be here, you know.
Are you a guy that lights fireworks on Pioneer Day?
I'm not a big firework person in general.
I can't stand that, by the way. Especially being a new dad, like there's nothing that disturbs you more at 10 p.m. than fireworks in your neighborhood.
Yeah, like last night, I had to remind myself. It's like, oh yeah, it is technically Pioneer Day today too. Like last night on the 23rd, because the parade happened and everything.
Yeah, but I thought it was my neighborhood last night, and I was like, oh no, just Pioneer Day fireworks.
I was like, it's 3 weeks since July 4th. Is fireworks still going? And then I was like, oh yeah, it's Pioneer Day. Anyway,
yes.
Dallin, what do we got on deck this week for the Top 5?
All right. Well, over the last couple of weeks, we've been sort of rolling through the KSL Sports Top 10 players in BYU's roster ahead of the season. And last week's entry was Jake Oldroyd.
Love it.
Kicker for BYU. And I did not have him in my Top 10. And I'm not going to lie, after the segment last week, I think you guys convinced me that I probably made a mistake.
Yeah.
Old Oroy has been excellent. He's one of the best players. And so started digging through his career up until this point and where he stands. So today we're talking about kickers. It's the Matt Biamonte special here. We are talking about the most career field goals made in BYU history. Right now, Jake Oroy is sixth all-time in BYU, so next season he will likely be in this top five. So let's take a look now what the top five looks like. You just got to give me the player, and we'll go from there. So a lot of pressure on Matt as the special teams expert here.
Put it on, baby. Let's go.
But we do start with Mitch this week. Matt coming off the win in last week's top five. So, Mitch, where do you want to start?
I'll go with a man that's got my same name, Mitch Payne.
It's a great guess, Mitch. Mitch Payne, yes. He is third all-time in career field goals made at BYU, 47 for Mitch Payne. Played from, 06 to 2010. Was pretty consistent, at least 10 field goals made all 4 years that he was a full-time starter. His best, most prolific season, 2010, 17 for 21. Not bad.
Yeah, good player for BYU. Kind of gets forgotten, I think, at times. But you look at all these all-time lists, he's near the top.
No doubt. All right, Matt, to you.
I'm going to go with a guy who I would have never guessed, except for I was looking at the kicker list last week, and it jumped out to me. He is Ethan Pochman.
No Ethan Pochman on the top five field goals made.
That hurts.
I hate to do this to him, but I'm going to have to. I'm going to do a steal here, and we go with Ethan's younger brother, Owen Pochman.
That's a tough one. You hate to see it, but Owen Pochman, number one all-time BYU, 66 career field goals made for Owen Pochman.
Yes.
I mean, just an incredible time at BYU. Finalist for the Lou Groza Award as a junior and a senior. Obviously, he went on to play in the NFL. But you look at some of the seasons, 17, 18, 19 field goals made, 98 through 2000. I mean, he was prolific. He hit it at a high percentage and was a reliable weapon for BYU and special teams.
Yeah, his older brother, Ethan, played that 1 year in 96. Mm-hmm. That was it.
And he had a phenomenal year. Right?
Yes,
number one.
Second all time in most field goals made in a single season. 20 field goals that season for Ethan.
And he has the most points scored in a single season, but not enough.
But not enough for on the career list.
And
but,
I think Owen Pochman holds the distinction of being the only man that. I don't know if I could say this on the air.
I know where you're going with this.
we'll probably table that. He had some beautiful
high profile relationships.
High profile relationship. Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
That's a great way of putting that. All right, Matt, we go back to you. Down 2-0 in the special teams top five. What's going on? Where are we going to go?
I'm going to go with another brother here. I think he might be on this list. I'm going to squeeze in Matt Payne. Okay.
I love this.
There we go.
Mitch gets Mitch Payne.
Yes.
Matt gets Matt Payne. Yes.
We might need to do some NIL deal for some former BYU players. The Mitch and Matt show.
I love
with the
it.
Paynes and Biamonte and Harper.
Where does he come in?
Yeah, Matt Payne, excuse me, second all time. Yeah. 54 career field goals made for Matt Payne. And much like his brother, very consistent. Over his career, at least 12 or 13 field goals made all 4 years as a starter, and a high percentage as well. So, you know, both those brothers very successful at BYU.
And weirdly enough, both when I think about the Paynes, I think about a couple things. Especially Matt was a outstanding tackler when he punted the ball.
Yes,
I'll never forget that. But the other thing, they were so good, but yet why do I remember Payne? Painful misses in big games. Matt Payne at Boise State. That one stings.
New Mexico in 04, the 10 a.m. game. If BYU makes that, they're going into the Utah game with a chance to win the conference title.
Mitch Payne, I think it was the last year of independence. The Utah game. Now, that wasn't his fault, but it gets blocked.
Oh, in 2010?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I do remember that. But yes, Matt Payne, though, wrecked some fools up on the blue turf. Chris Carr is steel reeling from getting wrecked by Matt Payne twice on the blue turf.
Phenomenal.
In 04.
Yeah, you know, that is the tough job of a kicker. Most people don't remember the field goals you hit right down the middle unless they're a game winner, but they will remember those tough misses. So we are at 2-1, and we go back to Mitch. Chance to win it here. What's your next guess?
I think I've got the win. I'm going to go with
He's
Jared McLaughlin.
Jared McPull. Not on the list. He comes in at number 7. 28 field goals made in his career. Okay. The door is open for Matt.
I don't feel good about this, but he played long enough. He might have snuck in. Justin Sorensen.
Oh!
Wow.
We got a game, Mitch.
Wow.
It's getting tight. Justin Sorensen, fourth all-time, 43 career field goals made. And that, his biggest season, 2013, he had 18 field goals that year, 18 for 22. Really well done. Had just a couple big seasons, 2013, 2011, struggled in 2012. But overall, a solid career for Justin Sorensen.
I thought he was going to be the best kicker in the world when he signed out of being And then the mission got him, man. Riding the unicycle. Was it a spider bite? Was a part of that, too?
He had a spider bite. He also had a weight room injury, I think I want to say. Yeah, it was like...
Powerful leg, though.
I've never seen a kicker recruit more hyped than Justin Sorensen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I remember that 2008 game against Northern Iowa, the home opener. I think the most intriguing storyline was like, ooh, BYU's going to actually get some touchbacks this week. Because... they finally got a kicker. Like, they knew they were going to win. Like, BYU was undefeated at home 2 years in a row. They're going to smoke Northern Iowa. They got the chance, though, to get some touchbacks this year because Sorensen's going to boot it. He was hitting, like, 70-yarders at Bingham. He was an All-American. He was amazing.
Yeah.
BYU, he was okay. I'm stunned he's in the top five, though. That's impressive.
Yeah, and there is one name left. Mm. So we go back to Mitch here.
Okay.
Are we going to get this last name? We'll find out.
He's already hinted.
Let's go with, we've talked a little bit about politics, oddly enough, here on the show today. I see this man once in a while on cable news, Jason Chaffetz.
Love the guess. No Jason Chaffetz.
He won that game winner was against Colorado in the All-American Bowl. Anyway. This is when Colorado was really good. It wasn't the bad Colorado that they are today. That was when Eric Bieniemy and, anyway, go on.
All right, Matt.
This is hard because Justin Sorensen's number 4. I feel like it could be anybody at number 5.
I know.
I'm going to take a stab at a man who had a coveted beard card.
Ooh.
Trevor Sampson.
That was a good pull. That was a good pull. The beard card, Trevor Sampson. How about let's go with, again, we're doing top 5 field goal makes, right?
Mm-hmm.
In
career
BYU
field goal makes, yep.
Football history here in the top 5 on Cougar Sports Saturday. Let's go with
I'm running out of names.
I'm trying to think. How about he played for 3 or 4 years? Red Almond? I didn't feel good about that.
No, Red Almond.
I like Red. Great guy. Yes, yes. But it was always kind of like, what's the distance this week? Does he got the leg? Like, it was. I don't miss that storyline.
Oh, the last name, I'm going to give you a little hint here. You got to think back a little bit. All right.
I'm dead.
So we're talking like maybe pre-90s. You know, we're talking about that. So not, you know, I'm not talking 60s here, but,
so
you
know. Chaffetz was a good guess.
Yeah,
then.
Okay. That's fine.
I'm dead. So I'm going to throw out this guy that I wanted to be so good that I know is not in the top five. It just never worked out. Andrew Mickelson.
He was the Oregon State guy. He was the guy that could boot him off kickoffs.
Yes.
He was like, we had like 7 kickers, I swear, at one season. Anyway, they had Lavelle's grandson. They had Mickelson. Let's see. I should know this. I'm trying to think of, okay, so it was like the 1980 Miracle Bowl. They had, I'm drawing a blank. The guy that had to hit the extra point to win it. Gunther. Kurt Gunther.
Okay. Oh, good guess, though. He is 8th. 27 field goals.
Yes.
For Kurt Gunther. You're in the right range.
I don't got it. I'm blanking on the 80s kickers. I'm blanking.
Matt's opening the door for you, Mitch.
Alan Boardman? No, he was a punter. That
Lee Johnson, punter.
Lee Johnson is 10th, by the way.
What?
24 career field goals. So there
That's
you go.
That's right. He did. I forgot that. Okay. How about, I'm trying to think here. I'm thinking of all the kickers in 84 and like 85. I'm thinking 84 because that offense, they had to settle for some field goals that year. They weren't just the prolific 83 offense. I am drawing a blank on the kicker. This is going to kill me. Give me the buzzer. I can't think of it. I don't want to keep dragging this out.
This is a tough one. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know this guy existed before I did this research. So,
was it 83, 84?
Not that season. How about this? We're talking.
Give us another hint.
86, 87, sort of seasons.
I got nothing. Okay, that makes sense because that's when a dip happened with the quarterback play after Bosco. Let's see. Gosh, I can't think. I'm so angry about this.
Yeah, tip of the cap to you.
That's a win for me and Dave.
I guess so.
Look at that. Yes. Woo-hoo.
Who is it?
Leonard Chitty.
Nope. What an ever.
34 career field goals made. He was a kicker in 86 and 87. Had 18 field goals made in 87, 16, and 86. And that was it, just those two seasons. But was really good and hit a lot of field goals those two seasons. Puts him up at number 5. But Jake Olderoy.
He's not going to last, unfortunately.
32 field goals made. So he's just too short of dipping into the top 5. So, I mean, he could be top 5. He could be top 3 at the end of this next season, Jake Olderoy. He's well on his way to putting his name on this list.
He will be because I believe that this guy will have a chance to make an NFL roster. Now, it's hard for kickers. He's probably going to go undrafted, but I think he has the leg. I think he's got the accuracy. I think that he can make an NFL team.
And it helps for Olderoy that he's going into, his 4th season? He's only a sophomore, so he's got a lot more games and a lot more opportunities. It's like that 2016 Arizona game, he was a freshman, and 2021 against Arizona, he's a sophomore. That makes a ton of sense, doesn't it? Leonard Chitty, is that the name right?
Yes,
Leonard Chitty.
That is it.
I don't know why that's no thought is registered right now. I'm feeling terrible. Usually, like, the history of BYU football, like you mentioned a name,
it's because
Mickelson, something comes up. Nothing's coming up.
I think it's because there's just that like 3 or 4 year window after Bosco and before Detmer that just kind of disappears.
Yeah, it's a good point. Other than like Jason Buck, Sean Knight, like there's not much to write home about in those late 80s years in a way for BYU football. Interesting. Good stuff, Dallin. Thank you for, stumping us and getting the win. Dave, I guess you can say we're the losers. You can cue up the music for both Matt and I. We're the losers. Yeah, we're the losers.
I feel like I'm a winner. I was down 2-0 and got a tie.
This is
you
a total
forced
loss for me.
The draw. Yeah, you forced the draw. That's pretty well done.
So Matt's pulling the old Lavelle stunt here, the 1991 San Diego State. Like, I could have gone for the win, but I got the tie and won the conference championship.
Yeah.
All right, we got to take a break. On the other side, we'll get to our BYU football top 10 players for the 2021 season. Number 8 gets revealed. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Dallin stumped us again in the top 10. That's been happening way too often in 2021, but Leonard Chitty was number 5. We could not get him, and another top 5 win to Dallin and Dave. You know, hey, that happened. So I'm still proud of myself for coming back 2-0. But right now we got to get out to something we've been doing all summer long, counting down, as voted upon by the KSL sports staff, the top 10 BYU football players heading into the 2021 season. We're revealing number 8, and it is a linebacker by the name of Keenan Peely.
You know, the Mike's the leader of the defense, obviously. So just want to play my role in the part that I can get everyone aligned, set up. I understand what's happening in the other positions, not necessarily just mine. The Mike needs to be the guy, the one to turn to. If you have questions or anything, alignment, assignment, technique, that's the guy to go to. So I want to be that guy and help out the defense as I can.
There you go. At number 8, Keenan Peely. So at number 10, we had Gunnar Romney. Last week, we had Jake Oldroyd, who inspired that top 5. And now we have the leader of the defense. Number 8, Keenan Peely. Last year, Mitch, 72 tackles, 1 fumble recovery. Really solid linebacker, and excited to see what he can do this upcoming year.
Yeah, he's like the quarterback of the defense, how he's going to fit within this defensive scheme. And, you know, it's interesting with BYU's defensive philosophy. I think some people get so fixated on, they're going to play 3-down linemen, 4-down linemen. Like, BYU's multiple. They're going to play whatever is going to be the best fit against a certain opponent each and every week. And you see that on film the last, you know, couple seasons with how they execute, how they line up schematically on defense. And you know, Keenan Peely is a versatile enough athlete to where you can line him up in a variety of different ways, and he's going to have success wherever he is on the field. He is a tackling machine, though, for BYU. He's the top returning tackler in the program from last year's defense. And, you know, you lose a guy like Isaiah Kafusi, who was a leader, who was a captain, kind of a voice, in a way, of that BYU defense. But I'll tell you, Keenan Peely is going to be a stud on this defense. He's going to be probably a captain, a leader. He will be looked upon to kind of be that tone setter. Just kind of reminds me a little bit of like Uwani Unga, how he's just a sure tackler. Nothing's going to get past him. That is kind of what reminds me a little bit of him, but I feel like he's kind of in that new wave of linebacking position where he's a little bit thinner than your typical, like, big shoulder padded guy. Keenan Peely is a good football player. I think he's a guy, too, that's good enough to maybe down the road hear his name called in the NFL draft, maybe as a late round guy. Keenan Peely's a heck of a football player.
There you go. Keenan Peely, number 8 on our top 10 countdown. We'll take the break. On the other side, we'll be joined by the pass game coordinator, wide receiver coach Fessy Satake. Joins Cougar Sports.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Touchdown! Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for 3! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. It's been a fun summer, and each and every Saturday as we get ready for football, BYU versus Arizona, September 4th. We've been talking with players and coaches, and right now we have the pleasure to be talking some football with the wide receivers coach, Fessy Satake. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Of course. Great to be here with you guys.
Man, it feels like so much has happened since the last time we talked, but now that we're in summer and we're kind of looking down the barrel to fall camp, what do you think your wide receivers need to do during this period of time where they're on their own and weightlifting and player-run stuff? What do they need to do to get ready to earn time on the field this fall?
Yeah, that's the golden question. There's a lot of guys. It's the primary answers, man. It's comes with sacrifice, but it's work, it's lift, it's get out and run routes, it's catch on the jugs machine, get with the quarterbacks, throw routes, find time to get into the film room and study our first opponent, self-scout what we've done, as an offense, sell scout what you've done individually in your time here. It's just all those basic things. There's not a lot of magic to it. But those guys who do that the most consistently, along with their physical preparation, I'll be able to see day one of fall camp who really utilize this summer to the fullest.
How much of a comfort level is there in roles? I mean, you're not going to be completely content. You're always looking to get better and improve and move on to the next thing. That's the nature of college football. But just maybe a comfort that you guys have established some winning success in this program. Just maybe speak to the offensive staff and the comfort level you guys currently have at the moment.
Yeah, and that comfort comes not from being content because something good happened, but I think that comes from the culture has been established and is in full effect. And that comes with a lot of things, you know, whether it's getting guys to buy in, weeding guys out, bringing in, just there's a lot of different variables. But when that culture is in full effect, that's where you start to feel that level of comfort, knowing that guys are latching on to the vision of the team and of our offensive unit, as you were speaking to. So, you know, for us, it's just a matter. Our job now is not so much to coach these guys on some of these principles and life lessons that they have to pick up on. It's kind of, you know, making sure that we keep hitting that right on the head, that these guys stay on top of their work. And so we're grateful. We got a lot of mature young men who are hungry to win. They know the recipe. They know what it takes to be successful. And it's our job to keep pushing that message through.
What impact does it have on the guys in your room to see a guy like Dax, who walked on and earned a scholarship, then gets drafted, is playing with the Washington football team? What kind of tangible impact does it have for the guys in the room?
It's huge. It sends the message that – it sends a lot of them, but the one that comes to my mind is that you can accomplish your dreams by just working your butt off. And Dax is living proof of that. Whether you're a walk-on or whether you're a scholarship guy who's been battling injuries, or whether you're a whole high-profile guy who had all these expectations and things didn't happen, like wherever you stand on that spectrum of being a college football player and having goals, you can accomplish that. And Dax's story is one of many, but it's a special one because it's recent. And, you know, I've got a great relationship, but he's become a role model for a lot of guys, not just in our program, but in the state of Utah, who aspire to play at BYU, to maybe walk on to university. And so I'm really glad to be just a small part of that journey and kind of see him have so much success. And I know a lot of guys have been inspired by him.
Talking with Fessy Satake here on KSL News Radio. And Fessy, I'm curious, you know, from the days when you were playing at Southern Utah as a player to now, college football has changed a lot. It's an unreal, honestly. It's a completely different game on the field. Off the field, we're seeing the name, image, likeness, a 12-team playoff potentially. Just speak to the direction of college football. How do you feel about where the sport is at and where things are heading?
You know, I feel just sports in general, everything evolves. Yeah. Everything does. And you always hear it all the time right now, like this day and age of basketball, like, oh, they're not tough like they were in the 80s, you know, where you could foul. But, you know, that's – it makes for great conversation and sports talk and debate, but that's the world we live in from its inception. Is that there's always been evolution and things change. And so right now, you know, in this day and age of technology, like everyone talks about how easily accessible it is to watch film and to game prep and all that stuff, which is true. But right along with that is the opposition of there's way more distractions too. So even though our guys can click a button and should be watching film, they also have a million other distractions, apps, different things that they can navigate through that can be distracting. So that's their challenge, and it's a different one. And it's one that the more we keep our mind open as coaches, the more we'll be able to help them navigate through those challenges, as opposed to expecting them to conform the world that we lived in. You know what I mean? And that's what causes the disconnect and lack of trust, and that's happening a lot. And I think it's why it's more important now than ever to get coaches. You don't have to be young. We have Coach Funk right now, who's been coaching for a long time, but I've been impressed at how quickly he's been able to adapt to this new wave of coaching, of our style, our culture of flipping the classroom and allowing these guys to interact with each other, you know, as opposed to the old school where it's the teacher-student you know, methods. So it's a long-winded answer, but I think it's a critical question and one that it sounds simple, but it's just not happening enough. And so it's changing. I'm grateful to be a part of it. It's new for me, but it keeps me on my toes and forces me to stay open and learn new things because the world is evolving and it's going to continue to do that. When my son's, if he chooses to play college football and is there, I'm sure it's going to be a lot different than it is right now. So it's a great training ground for me and anyone in the future.
As a passing game coordinator in your role with the wide receivers and big piece of the offense, maybe what do you do to help keep these players engaged that are not distracted? Is there certain methods or technology that you guys do use to keep these guys' attention spans active?
Yeah, it's a great question. And first things first, Kalani has really implemented that culture to all of us as the coaches. He wants us to find new innovative ways and techniques that we can keep these guys engaged. And every coach kind of has different things that fit their personality. I love to get my guys interacting with each other. We have whiteboards, individual whiteboards in our room where in a 45-minute meeting, I'll probably talk 10 to 15 of them. And the rest is those guys on the board. I'm giving them assignments to do. We'll do cahoots. We'll do quizzes. We'll do just little exercises. And I'll switch it up. You know, I'm not going to teach one way in one meeting setting. I'm a huge believer in breaks and making things fun. We'll do trivia. We'll do drafts. I'll make these guys we'll do some sports trivia. We'll do stuff that's not even related to football. But if our guys don't have any fun in this meeting, then we're failing them as coaches. And this is a time in their life where there's a lot of business to take care of, but it should also be some of the funner times in your life. And if in a meeting setting they can't feel that and they feel bored or stress or anxiety, then we're not doing our job as coaches. And so those are just some of the things we do, and I'm grateful because it pushes us as coaches. It's really easy to just sit there. We could talk. That's one thing coaches can do. For example, I'm probably answering this question way longer than I should, but it stretches us. It makes us find new ways and to change. What's more important, though, for me on a personal level, is I'm getting insight as to how my kids need to be parented and that it needs to be different than how I was parented. And so football has allowed me to realize that, you know what, I need to evolve as a coach in the way I teach and learn. I need to evolve as a parent. I need to evolve as a husband. And it's been such an unbelievable, humbling training ground for me.
A few more moments here with wide receiver coach Fessy Satake. Maybe we can throw a few rapid-fire questions your way. You mentioned the sports trivia and these little games you play. Who's winning the sports trivia the most frequently in the wide receiver room?
God, that's a good question. Neil's really good. Neil Pauton's really good. Cody Epps is really good. I would say those two kind of get the sports trivia stuff the best. Gunner's good too. Gunner's a solid one. Those are kind of I'm trying to weed through the guys who really suck, and there's a lot of them. So when I say they're really good, it's relative to the rest of the guys.
What about fastest guy in the room?
Fastest guy, that would be a big debate. Probably short yardage Chris Jackson.
Yeah.
Most explosive, highest vertical. So
how much improvement did he make in spring?
A ton. I was so proud of him. Just the his ability to finally like latch onto the playbook. I really didn't have to worry about him and what he was going to do. He did a really good job. Super proud of him.
You know, it's interesting. You bring in a return missionary and Chase Roberts, and years past, you know, following BYU for years, there would always be this feeling of, you know, you need McKay Jacobson or Austin Colley to step right in and be a dog. But like Chase Roberts is an all-world type recruit, yet you got a ton of proven guys already ahead of him. He's got a long way to move. It's a nice luxury for your room to have someone where he can maybe just take the time to learn if you know, obviously if everyone stays healthy, but that's seems like that's the type of personnel you guys have right now.
Exactly. That's what it is. If Chase is ready to roll and he earns his way, great. But if he doesn't, he's got a huge supporting cast and veterans to learn from. That's just going to make him that much better of a player, and that goes for everyone. But I'm really excited to see how this room shakes out. It's going to be really, really tough, but I like having these types of tough problems as opposed to the other side of the coin.
Is Chase the only newcomer? Is Quinton Rice, is he going to be joining as well? And
yeah, that's still to be determined. Chase is the only for sure newcomer right now to the
receiver. And he's on campus and mm-hmm. going through all of that. Yep. And just for some quick personnel notes with the wide receiver room, Cody Epps comes back. Terrence Fall, is he still part of the program? Also, Keanu Hill, all those guys, how are they looking?
Yeah, they're all looking great. Braden Cosper, that kind of, highlighted is the Nakua brothers, and then you got Gunnar and Neil who are coming back, and then you got Chase Roberts who was highly touted back from his mission. Well, you got that wave of receivers, Braden Cosper, Keanu Hill, Terrence Fall, Chris Jackson, Cody Epps. You got your preferred walk-ons and Hobbs Nyberg, Cade Moore, yeah. Talmadge Gunther. I mean, it's deep, and all those guys, you can justify any one of them being heavy contributors on a week-to-week basis in the season. But all those guys, you know, aside from the ones who are being highlighted, those guys are working just as hard. And that's what makes this really, really hard is because, you know, it's going to make everyone rise to the highest level of competition. You can't slip one day because there are going to be guys multiple ready to take your spot if you're not, you know, living up to your end of the bargain.
And is that something that you have to kind of instill in these guys? The reason I bring it up is we talked with Aaron Roderick earlier, and he said when he talked to the quarterback room, he was like, hey, there's only 20 teams a year typically that have one guy play the whole year. So you have to be ready. Is that a message that – because you look at that wide receiver group, it's like, how do all these people see the field? There's so much talent, not enough plays. Is that a message that you try to instill in them, is that at any moment your number can be called?
Yeah, for sure. You used to try and Jedi mind trick guys, like keep the morale high, like, hey, you know, you don't ever count yourself out. You might play, but that's the reality of college football right now, is like – not everyone sticks through the whole season. You have to be ready. And although all these guys want to be the guys day one, you know, you got to now instill mental toughness so that just because that doesn't happen, you know, your expectations aren't met. You still have to keep that thing up, because at any time your name can be called. And we've had enough of those examples happen in the past couple of years where I think these guys, they're aware of it, and you don't have to try and instill that so much as a coach.
He's BYU passing game coordinator Fessy Satake. And Coach, good luck this season. Thanks for all the time, and hopefully you can get some more golf. And I know you're still big into the golf, right?
Yeah. Can you see my tan?
Got any more hole-in-ones recently?
I did, but it was at Tiger Woods' new course on Pebble Beach. It's a par 3 course.
Ooh.
So it was only like 65 yards. So
were you in the coach's classic?
I was.
Was it you, Kalani? Who other coaches
Ed
were in it?
E.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so A-Rod had a newborn, you know. And
he was out.
Yeah, but it was an unbelievable experience. And that new par 3 course is unreal. But wow. So I have a 1.5 hole-in-ones.
Okay.
A-Rod's got a new – he's got a new hobby anyways, right?
So. Yeah, it's called waking up in the middle of the night is his new hobby.
I told my wife after 3, we're done. Got a 4-year-old now, like, no more crying late at night.
You're the same as me. We have 3, and she's our last one's 4, and I'm like, we're done.
Yep.
Why push reset now? It's too late.
My wife was holding a baby, and she's like, doesn't this look sweet, having our kids hold this? I'm like, no. Like, absolutely not. Like, you're going to be on your own. The football season's back. It's in person now. No more masks, COVID. Fessy, we appreciate the time as always, and good luck this season.
Always good. Thanks,
That's Fessy Satake here on KSL News Radio.
Saturday next, upcoming traffic and weather, and then we'll get to that interview. Back after this.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Touchdown! Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for 3! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Conference realignment, the story of the week, maybe the story of the year in college athletics. I mean, a couple weeks ago, we might have thought it was expanded playoff, but that just seems like a distant memory as Texas and Oklahoma are reportedly set to announce next week that they're off to the SEC when the next wave of TV deals comes up. And we'll kind of have to see the timeline of when they actually start playing those games, which, by the way, doesn't that make it an awkward couple years where you're playing for a Big 12 championship, but they're gone? Like, and what's happening? Like, it's just, this whole thing is crazy. And it may end up benefiting BYU. It may not. I do think, Mitch, this is BYU's best opportunity to get in there. And as I said earlier, how we view college athletics, it's going to be different, especially football, because Power Five's over, and Group of Five is kind of over too. I feel like there's the SEC, and then the Big Ten, and then let's see what happens after that. Like, the Pac-12 and the ACC are distant, and if we're being real, the ACC is far ahead of the Pac-12. The ACC has Clemson, who is one of the current top teams, and then they have a couple legacy teams, Florida State and Miami. The Pac-12 has USC, which is not that good, and Oregon, which has been, Oregon, you'd probably compare Oregon to Clemson, but Clemson's much better, and USC to Florida State, and that's probably on par, and then they got nobody that fills the Miami role. So it's going to be so weird to think about how college football is going to be, but this could benefit BYU. You know, one thing we haven't talked about enough, and let's talk about this now. We got to get to some texts too, and we will. We'll get to the texts. Is independence just the best option here? Like, if the college football playoff is going to remain at 12, and I think that's in flux, do you just stay the path?
It's a good question, Matt. And, you know, think about this too with independence. What if BYU was in the Big 12 right now with all this uncertainty? Like, you know, like, I mean, it's a league that obviously BYU would love to be in. Don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, by no
would means, have loved to have been in.
I think BYU fans would still love to be in it.
If only with this caveat, though, if they expand and they are guaranteed a new TV deal.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that, but independence has been a great fit for BYU. I honestly feel like, in terms of, we've talked a lot today about political fit, cultural fit, things like that, because sadly that matters in these moves. Like, I wish it wasn't. I wish it was just simply, hey, that's a great football program. That's a great athletic department. Like, that, we want them in the Big 12. It's not that easy.
We wouldn't be having this conversation if that wasn't a part of the...
It's so true. But independence is a brilliant fit for BYU. The West Coast Conference is an amazing fit for BYU. A bunch of faith-based institutions that respect and kind of admire BYU's standards. Like, they've accommodated BYU. Like, hey, we used to play the West Coast Conference basketball tournament on Sundays. We won't do that anymore. We'll take that day off. Like, it is a league that really bends over backwards for BYU, where they're not the top dog. BYU is, and it's Gonzaga, but yet they'll still bend over backwards for BYU because they just have so much more reach than that of Gonzaga. I think independence can continue to work. I think the fear that I have with independence is more aligned with, like, the playoff future. The future of the playoff, the 12-team playoff, concerns me a little bit with being an independent, because will BYU have access to that playoff? Will they have a legitimate path to getting in that top 12? Will teams, say, in the 16-team SEC be incentivized to actually step out of conference and play a good team like BYU?
No.
Like, think about it now. The SEC, why would you step out of a league to challenge yourself? You're now in a conference with Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, according to reports, LSU, Texas A&M, Auburn. Like, it could go on and on. Why would you take the challenge of doing a home-and-home like, say, Tennessee has done in the past, play BYU, risk a loss when you're already in a league that will get the benefit of the doubt where you could go 9-3 and still get in the playoff?
Yeah, you wouldn't. That was my biggest concern when we talked about playoff expansion a couple weeks ago, where I'm like, how can we guarantee that scheduling is going to work? That's why, if this is what happens, BYU is going to have to knock on anyone's door to let them in, from a scheduling perspective, which is no good. Let's get some text, Mitch. I want to get your thoughts on this question, too. So, it's from Texter 5168. Preston Waite here from the Mission. Oh, Preston Waite. Glad I get to listen to you guys on Saturday. Stoked we're talking about conference realignment. Are you stoked to be talking conference realignment? Because I feel like that's a legitimate question. As a BYU fan, are you excited about conference realignment, or are you nervous about conference realignment?
If I was to poll the entire fan base, I think Moore would say nervous. Because, as Texter 3071 writes, I'm pessimistic. I'm pessimistic when it comes to BYU and big things. The Heartbreak Cougars, as he writes, or he or she writes. Seems like too many times BYU Sports has let down fans when there's no excuse or reason for losing. You know, that might be a little bit extreme, but, like, I feel like it's an exciting conversation that everyone loves to, like, engage in and read and consume. Like, it's off the charts in terms of engagement. But I think there's just still a nervous factor to it, because it feels like, you know, what is the future going to hold?
will BYU have some sort of seat at the table to be involved in the power structure of college sports? Like, that's all Cougar fans want, whether it's independence or Big 12, Pac 12. They just want to have this athletic department part of the power structure of college athletics. And the thought of being left out again, it's just like, oh man, how many times do they have to deal with this? So I think it's a little bit of both. I know that's not the great answer to say, but I feel like there's excitement because it's a fun topic because of all the possibilities, but I think it makes more BYU fans nervous than excited.
I'm mostly excited.
Yeah.
I just feel like things are going to shake out in a good way, because if you really break it up, the only way, in my opinion, BYU gets left out is if teams that were once Power Fives are getting axed from the Power Five status, because there's not enough places for them to go. Because you can't put the Big 12 teams in all these other conferences and still have Notre Dame not in. Like, there's if you want to expand every conference to 16, which I would love to do, by the way, I'd love to have four teams of 16. It's uniform. The criteria is the same, which, side note, is something I hope happens from all this,
yeah,
is that everything settles into, we're all in the same playing field in terms of same number of teams and conferences, yada, yada, yada. But if you do that, I think Notre Dame's got to go somewhere. And if Notre Dame goes somewhere, then there's not enough spots for the rest of the teams, because there's four in the Big 12, four in the Pac-12. The SEC's done. There's two in the Big 10, and is there two in the ACC?
Yeah, there would be.
But there are nine teams,
yeah,
with Notre Dame.
Yeah, Notre Dame will be an ACC member. If they go to a league, it's going to be in the ACC. It's actually in a contract. Like, they will have to go to the ACC.
Okay. So then there's seven spots for eight, yep, teams in the Big. So who's getting axed?
That's what's interesting. And I feel like that's why I kind of worry about potentially, you know, these Big 12 teams that are left over, if they feel like it's, even if they expanded, like, they're always going to be on shaky ground, they're going to try to go to the most stable thing they possibly can. I think that Kansas and the Big Ten makes a lot of sense. And I think that if Kansas can legitimately go to the Big Ten, they're going to go the first chance they can get. And rightfully so, because the,
yep,
Big Ten
is stable.
They have stability. They're the second best thing to the SEC. They're always going to be around, even though you could argue they got a lot of deadbeat programs too in that league. But still, they've been grandfathered in since the 1890s, so they're, you know, it's like, it's just, it is what it is, and that's the perception, that they're all powerful and this and that. So Kansas, if they get actual interest and invite down the road potentially from the Big Ten, I think they're gone. The Pac-12 will be fascinating to me in all this, because I just can't wrap my mind around them just bending over backwards to extend these teams that are left over in the Big 12. I think the Big 12 teams would jump at the chance to do it, but at the same time, like, culturally, some of these programs don't fit in the Pac-12 conference, and that would, no, be a,
namely,
a massive shift.
And TCU.
It just, in Oklahoma State too. Like, you're talking about basically a truck stop type of town going into these big cities that are
LA,
primarily liberal, and they just
San
don't
Francisco.
Align really with your dynamic, like the dynamic in that part of the country. Like, it would just be a complete shift.
And from a political perspective, Texas is conservative.
Yeah,
California's not.
Yeah, it'd be just strange. But I feel like the Pac-12 commissioner, though, is trying to do everything he can to enhance the image of that league, which has taken a beating under Larry Scott.
Yeah.
And I think that he wants to try to get the Pac-12 network onto DirecTV and also enhance the possibilities on streaming, too. And I think that's one of the big things that's going to be a benefit to BYU, is that they have an ability to be attractive in the straight-to-consumer space. Like, we host a show that's focused primarily on BYU sports. BYU fans have it's a national following, and they will pay a premium to watch their team play. Like, I remember 2 years ago when BYU's playing UMass, the worst team in college football, fans are ponying up $20 to see BYU thump the living daylights out of UMass, but they paid because they want to see their team play no matter where it is, when it is. They are going to pay whatever it takes to watch their team play. Like, I know that there's that stigma, like, oh, BYU will go to the Vegas, they won't break the Ten Commandments and break a 20. Like, no, BYU fans, they are business-minded, they're fiscally sound, financially savvy. They will pay to watch their team play. Like, don't get it twisted. Like, BYU would be great in the streaming space and would enhance any league's model to try to get more subscribers in that area.
We got some more texts coming in, so we'll get to a few more here. 9108 says, if you could snap your fingers and put BYU in, what is the best situation possible? BYU beats down the door of the Big Ten and sells them on playing a game every Saturday in a different time zone.
That'd be sweet.
I don't think it's the Big Ten. I don't. I think the best scenario is for the remaining Big 12 teams to stay together and you expand that conference to 16, beat the Pac-12 to it, beat the ACC to it, and get the best of whoever is willing. And I would be calling teams in other conferences too, namely Nebraska, USC, UCLA. I don't know. Maybe there's some teams in the ACC that are looking to enhance their image. So maybe snatch a Georgia Tech or something like that. But that's what I think is the best outcome for BYU, is go to the Big 12 and try and rebrand that conference.
It makes a ton of sense for the Big 12 with their eight remaining members. Again, all the reports indicate that Texas and Oklahoma are gone. The eight remaining members stay together and add BYU, add UCF, add Cincinnati, add Boise. I'm telling you, these group of five programs, they would have success. Like Utah and TCU, there is data that's like they went into those leagues, and yes, there were some growing pains. Like TCU had some four-win seasons. Utah had some five-win seasons. But they've also had some big-time seasons where they were in the playoff conversation. TCU that first year, Utah in 2019. So teams can move up from the group of five, yep, and they get that power label. Suddenly it can change their fortunes to a massive degree. And I think it would do that for BYU, UCF, and really Cincinnati as well. These are athletic departments that are committed to winning, and I think they would have a lot of success.
Let's keep talking conference realignment, huh?
Let's do it.
We got one more segment, but heck, we're sticking with conference realignment. Stay with us, guys. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com, here on your legacy home of the BYU Cougars, KSL News Radio. We're counting down the days to the BYU football season, 42 days away till kickoff. It's Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. We've had a loaded show. We had Cade Finnegan, new BYU quarterback transfer from Boise State, on the program. We also had Fessy Satake discussing the wide receivers, and we've discussed a whole lot of conference realignment here on the program, and we continue that conversation here in the hurry up. And let's fire up that music, Matt. You love that. How much this summer has your wife been inundated with NFL Films music when she fires up like the Bluetooth speaker? It just automatically starts playing NFL Films,
not as
right?
much as you think, because okay, Disney songs have taken over in my house, unfortunately. Oh, okay. But she is sick of the reruns on YouTube.
Yeah. She's like, let's get some fresh content, probably. Let's get some actual new games to watch. Yeah, let's do that. Hey, let's look at this. Conference realignment. All the reports again. Texas and Oklahoma going to be going to the SEC. Big 12, what are they going to do next? Who do you feel, if you have a crystal ball in front of you, who are going to be the winners and losers in all of this in conference realignment? Who do you think are going to be the teams that are going to win, or the leagues? How do you see this shaking all out, Matt?
I think the biggest loser, I'm going to start there because I've been thinking about this, is high school athletes. I just feel like it's hard enough to get a scholarship, and now it's going to be even harder to get a meaningful scholarship because the gap is going to widen between the upper level of college football and the rest of teams. I just feel sad because it used to be so meaningful to get a college scholarship anywhere. And now if you get a college scholarship at some lower level Division I team, it's not as meaningful as it's ever been. And you may never even get a chance to prove yourself against a big team, because now you get maybe one crack a year to prove yourself against the power. I don't know if that's going to happen anymore. Like, why would the SEC doesn't need to schedule anyone outside of the SEC. You play your eight conference games, you play four on the other side, and that's the way it is. And so I just feel bad for high school athletes, because it's even harder and harder and harder to prove yourself at the college level, which is what gets you an opportunity in the NFL. And I just hate that it's becoming, we're minimizing what it means to get a college scholarship.
Yeah, that's an interesting angle that I don't think many people look at, because I do think it is, there's just this label of group of five, it's second rate, going to those programs. Like, no, like, there's good football, there's good sports played.
It won't get recognized anymore, because all day long on ESPN and ABC, it's going to be these upper echelon conferences, and then you may be able to watch Utah State and San Jose State on the ESPN app at 10:30 p.m.
Yeah, definitely a winner in this is going to be Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC. I think this is
I think they're losers.
I think it's a home run move for both parties. Absolutely.
No.
Texas and Oklahoma, like, this will revive the Texas brand. They're going to be
the brand is strong as it ever can be.
No, they're on hard times right now in Texas.
Hard times when you're raking in over $200 million a year as an athletic department.
But
that's
their on-field product is bad.
Who cares? It's not going to be any better. They've won, I believe, 3 conference championships in the last 20 years.
That's true.
And it's going to get worse in the SEC. They're not winning. They're never winning in the SEC.
It's going to get better.
No, it's not. As long as Nick Saban is around, you can forget about that conference.
Doesn't matter now, because they can go probably like 10-2, 9-3, and still make a 12-team playoff.
They're not going to, because LSU's going to. Texas A&M is ahead of them.
Texas A&M will fall back behind them again.
They're a loser.
Texas A&M will now lose their little identity in the state of Texas, because now Texas will supersede them. And I just think that it's honestly an amazing move. Like, I just kind of look at it and go, wow, that is amazing, the potential move here of Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC. I think both sides win in a significant way. And do you wonder, is this the last for the SEC? Like, are they just done now? It's like, I would have thought they would have been done at 14 after they got A&M. I thought, oh, they're not going to expand anymore. They're done. Do you think they go beyond 16?
My heart wants it to be over.
Yeah.
My brain is telling me it's not done, and then eventually all the big names will come over there.
Yeah.
And that will just be its own thing, and then there'll be everything else. And I hate that.
Because it'll be like basically a glorified NFL.
Glorified NFL.
They'll just, like, they will be the only league in college football potentially that matters. They'll broker their own TV deal that'll be worth billions.
Yep.
And no one else will matter. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point, because I love college football, and I feel like it's clinging to the last days of what we love about college football. We got to enjoy it while we can, because the sport is drastically changing.
For me, I let go of the cliff a few years ago, honestly. I'm in a free fall with college athletics, just because we've lost so much of what's great. Like, the only thing I'm hanging on by now is tradition. I love the tradition of the band and the in-state games and the pageantry, and I think that's going away too. Here's a winner: Ohio State, because the Big Ten is probably going to go to 16 teams, and they're going to add nobody of consequence, and so Ohio State is still going to dominate the league. Because you look at the SEC, there are now 8 teams in the SEC that can and should be top 10 programs.
Yeah.
But you cannot say that about the Big Ten, and there's nobody they can add that will move that needle, except for Notre Dame. But as you've mentioned, they're not going.
Yeah.
So it's going to be Kansas and I don't even know who the other team is.
Yeah, the Big Ten, I almost feel like they shouldn't expand. Like, they shouldn't just add. Like, I mean, add programs, they're going to add
there's
more value.
Left.
Like, Kansas, I get it with the academics. Their basketball is top-notch, but basketball doesn't move the needle in anything of this.
Kansas, if they get added to the Big Ten and elevated and rescued from the Big, it will drive me nuts because of the scandal.
But Big Ten's already done it. They added Rutgers. You know, like, Rutgers got in. Like, are you kidding me? Like, Rutgers is as a power conference team in one of the best conferences in all of college athletics. It still blows me away. Like, Rutgers.
The Les Miles thing is disturbing.
Yeah.
Down at Kansas. And they're going to get rescued and elevated.
Potentially. Like, there's reports out there that they're having a phone call with the Big Ten Conference. Not sure on the exact date when that's going to happen, but Kansas and the Big Ten have always kind of flirted a little bit, and it makes sense now. And that's again where you hope that Kansas just stands pat and stays with the current Big 12 members, because if they leave, it's only, to me, it's going to be just one team's going to leave, then they're all going to want to leave. If they can all stay together, all 8 teams, then you can see the path for BYU to get in that league. But if Kansas bolts and these other programs feel like Kansas and Iowa State are wandering and look for other opportunities, then all of them are going to just be fleeing as quick as they can, like it's the Titanic. Like, they're going to be jumping as quick as humanly possible. BYU, they got to hope that these Big 12 teams stay together as an 8-man group, and because then there's a chance for the BYUs, the UCFs, the Cincinnati's to get into that Big 12.
Here's a loser: the Pac 12.
Because you think so?
Yeah. Well, hear me out. Don't scoff at me like
you think so.
Here's why. Once upon a time, they were trying to bring Texas and Oklahoma over and create what the SEC has created. And now that's gone because there's no one left that's even nearly as that moves the needle like Texas and Oklahoma. So it doesn't matter who they add. It's not going to be as significant as it would have been if it had been those teams.
I think, though, the Pac-12, I would say, is probably going to be a winner in all this potentially because
they're not going to get blown up like the Big 12.
That's kind of my direction because it feels like if there's going to be a league now that, quote, dissolves, it'd be the Big 12. They would be the Big East. Whereas there was some point where you thought, oh, maybe USC goes independent. Maybe UCLA wants to look at the Big 12. Like, maybe the Pac-12 dissolves. But it seems like the Pac-12 could be stable because of geography, and that works in their favor.
But there's nobody they can add. I mean, it
BYU? That'd be an amazing ad.
Yeah, it would. All right. Well, I mean, we can keep going, but unfortunately, we got to wrap it up. So for Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte, our producer, Dallin Graff, our board op, Dave Meekum, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.